Yeah, so it's been a big week. It's been the biggest week we've had in a long time. For those that care, this was 9to5 Google's best week of the year so far in terms of traffic. So that's pretty awesome. Thank you for everyone that's been tuning in and reading all our stuff this week. And also, we just hit a pretty big milestone as a site. We just hit 10 million page views for the month of September, which is the first time we've ever had a 10 million page view month. And we still have a couple of days to go. So that's a pretty big deal for us. Congrats to Abner and Ben and Kyle and Damien and Dylan for accomplishing that. It's crazy. It's awesome. And typically, September is not even our biggest month of the year. So we're looking forward to next month to see how it does, especially with Google's event coming up on the 15th.
The 15th.
So, speaking of that, let's just jump right into our show today. The first thing we're going to talk about is a very long awaited update to the Pixelbook. And let's just do a little bit of the background first. I think maybe you know the details better than I do, but we've been tracking Atlas.
Yes.
Since summer of 2018, maybe?
Yeah, that sounds about right. When we first heard of Atlas, we assumed this was a Pixelbook 2 device. We saw it in development alongside what eventually became the Pixel Slate. And reading up the last year's event, it very much seemed that Google was going to announce two devices in what some thought would be a departure from the Pixelbook line that dates back to the Chromebook Pixel of new hardware every 2 years. So if Google, with this Pixelbook Go, is continuing in that two-year cycle, 2019 is right on track for a new Chromebook. The new made by Google Chromebook.
Yeah, we both kind of thought that this might launch last year alongside the Pixel Slate for a lot of reasons, because based on all the details that we were able to dig up in the Chromium repository, like a lot of in the source code, like a lot of aspects of these two devices are not just similar, they're identical. Some of the things that are, you know, easier to spot in the Chromium open source is that for one thing, the processors. And as far as we know, and as we've reported, these are going to be the exact same Intel chips that were in the Pixel Slate. So a lot of things were aligning up. I mean, we thought that this might be a Google Chromebook Google made Chromebook, a Pixelbook for this whole time, because there were plenty of things that were tipping us off on that. I think one of the other early things was just the layout of the keyboard. Mm-hmm. And one of the interesting differences is that on this one, the actual power button is on the keyboard. So
yes, thank you.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's different obviously than the Pixel Slate, but a lot of other things were very similar between the Pixel Slate and Atlas, what we now know as the Pixelbook Go. And basically it just seemed like they were being developed side by side based on how many commits we were seeing referencing them in Chromium last year. And so I thought we really might have seen it last year. But yeah, obviously there's so much to the development cycle that we're not privy to. But anyways, it does feel like it is maybe a year behind in some ways. I don't know. But yeah, it's going to happen. Pixelbook Go, yeah. It's happening. It's happening this year. It's coming in. Google's going to announce it next month. So let's just dive into, I guess, my report on things, just to kind of give a little bit of an overview of what this device is before we start to talk about what the hell it exists for. we don't understand. but basically, it's called the Pixelbook Go. It seems like it's going to be a clamshell kind of unibody, maybe kind of sort of like just traditional laptop form factor. It seems like someone inside Google said, hey, MacBook Air, let's make one of those.
Yep.
And it looks like it's just going to be a foldable, you know, just a typical
clamshell
laptop. We're told that it will forego some of the things that we've come to know from the first Pixelbook, the 2-in-1 form factor, kind of like fold over kind of tent mode.
Yeah.
You know, whatever, you can fold it all the way over if you want to look and watch movies with the keyboard facing down on a desk, for example. It's apparently not going to have Pixelbook Pen compatibility, so that's a big change, which the first Pixelbook and the Pixel Slate both did. And obviously it's not going to have some kind of detachable keyboard sort of thing like the Pixel Slate did. So it looks like kind of a little bit of a return to the traditional Chromebook form factor in so many ways. And so, I mean, yeah, that's what to expect in terms of just the overall form of the device. We can confirm that this is Atlas, by the way. So for those that don't know, you know, I guess for those that are completely out of the loop, Atlas has been this code name we've been tracking forever, and we've seen videos and images of this leak, thanks to some commits in Chromium. And we just didn't know if it was even Google hardware. I mean, there was nothing that surely tipped it off as definitely Google's. I mean, even I think both of us, when we first saw that those leaks, it seemed more like maybe an HP laptop or just,
yeah,
it just didn't seem to align with some of the, you know, the, like the Pixel Slate or the Pixelbook kind of design language, or any of Google's design language for that matter. But we know that it is. So if you want to go over to 95google.com and check out our scoop, we actually embedded one of the videos that appeared earlier this year, and we can confirm that this, yes, is indeed the Pixelbook Go that's shown in this video. And we kind of tried to do a little bit of a shop of it. We basically just screenshotted this old video of the laptop and slapped on a Chrome desktop and gave it a white background. And that's our image. So yeah, there's that. For the display, I guess this is one of the most interesting new tidbits that we had, which is this device is going to be 13.3 inches. It's obviously going to be a touchscreen, as pretty much every laptop is nowadays, except the MacBook lines. And it will come in both non-4K and 4K variants. And it looks like kind of just similar kind of lineup that the rest of the Pixelbook and Pixel Slate models offered, basically all the way down to from an Intel M3 up to an i5 or an i7. And it seems like the lower end models are not going to have the 4K display, while the upper end, I'm assuming more expensive, far more expensive models potentially, are going to have that really nice 4K display. So that's what the different variants are. It looks like the lower ended variants are going to have 8 gigs of RAM. The higher ended variants are going to have 16 gigs of RAM, and they'll be available in a few different storage capacities. Again, we're not entirely sure on what these capacities are going to look like or what the exact model lineup will be, but these are the numbers: 64, 128, 256 gigs of storage. I'm assuming, for example, that the very entry level will probably be 8 gigs of RAM, Intel Core M3, and 64 gigs of storage. That's going to be the cheapest version of this laptop. And yeah, I mean, a lot of the rest of the things we already knew. We're just rehashing some things that we discovered earlier in Chromium and have now kind of corroborated, which is it's got a 2-megapixel front camera, which is awful. Titan C chip, the same. I think it's going to be the same Wi-Fi and Bluetooth as Pixel Slate. 2 USB-C ports, one on each side, each with an LED that shows whenever you're charging via that jack, and a 3.5mm headphone jack. So hooray for that. A couple colors. We heard there's a black and a pinkish.
Yeah.
And we don't know the price. So that's pretty much all the details we have. I mean, the device is coming next month, and we just got basically the basics of what it is going to be. We don't know the price. And that's kind of, to me, the price is the conversation. Well, there's a few different conversations we had. First of all, let's talk about, I guess it's kind of all together. The price and the name are kind of the two biggest things. What do you think about Let's say this. Let's say, assuming the price is $7.99, which at these specs would be the same price as the entry level Pixel Slate. Let's just say that, because I'm not saying that's the case, but let's say that it would align with the Pixel Slate in specs. Does everything about this as a package make sense if that's the case?
Not at $7.99. Let's start the name, because we have some fun with that. Pixelbook Go. So everything is called Go these days. There's Pokemon Go, HBO Go, Surface Go. So many things are called Go. And this is Google, it's Google, I guess, tapping into a trend of Go, of this mobility, of this portability. I know, so you get some speed, something like that. And what I thought when what I think of Go and what this laptop ends up looking like is it doesn't line up. I'm thinking of Go, I'm thinking of a convertible, I'm thinking of a 2-in-1, I'm thinking of the original Pixelbook, not this just straightforward form factor for regular Chromebook. It doesn't match. And you brought up the MacBook Air, which I think is the correct way to think about this. It's Google wanted to have a competitor to the MacBook Air, and their version of Air is obviously Go. And it's fine, I guess, in the long run.
Yeah, I don't know. It's hard to paint a picture of what this device is going to be and what kind of segment of the market it's going to be, or who is it going to be aimed at? Like, what is going to be there? Because we're getting mixed signals, right? Like, do you want to tell us about what you heard earlier this year at Cloudnext 2019? Maybe that will color this conversation a little bit.
So Cloudnext, Google's developer conference, enterprise cloud developer conference, and they had this session. Google Hardware had this session, and they were talking about the Pixelbook and how businesses really love the Pixelbook, and how some businesses really like the Pixel Slate because it was portable and their employees could bring it around. So they, in the session, they talked about what was coming next. And basically, they telegraphed this Pixelbook Go, and there's a slide that says that essentially our next laptop is for people on the go. And in retrospect, that name makes a lot of sense, though rather that description, knowing that now that we know the name. But they just imagine this as this portable laptop for people, for front-end workers who are a bit mobile, who just want to get some work done. And that's their mindset on the enterprise standpoint of why businesses would want to buy a first-party a Pixelbook. First party Chrome OS device from Google. And again, that description so matches the MacBook Air in terms of what Google's targeting here. Like, for better or worse, the MacBook Air is really, it's what people still think of. A lot of people have a lot of affinity to that device, and it really does make sense for Google to target that.
Yeah, it's kind of, the MacBook Air is kind of Apple's laptop for everyone kind of product. And I don't know if thinking of this as a MacBook is the best way to think about it, because I mean, even now, MacBook pretty much starts at $9.99, right? And I don't know. I mean, there's multiple ways this Go branding could go. Look at the Surface Go, and the Surface Go is. I think this, to me, my gut would tell me that, I don't know. Part of me is leaning toward the direction of, is this Google's attempt at doing the volume strategy with the Pixelbook? And by that I mean, you know, with Google Homes, they price them dirt cheap, and they make them as accessible as possible, and they make them stupid not to buy them. And you know, because of that, they've been able to push insane numbers of these things. Like, they caught up to Amazon in like 2 years, by basically giving away Google Home Minis. And I don't know, part of me wonders is like, does Google need to do that with their first party laptops? And I don't know, like, to me, it seems like the, what this might be is, I don't know, it's hard because Google does also need to, they need to make money on their hardware.
But yeah.
It's like, I don't know, like at 500, say this was $500, like.
That's a different story, I think.
It's like that would align more with the message that Microsoft is sending with the Surface Go, where it's like, this is the accessible laptop that is the basic laptop that anyone can buy and anyone can use. And it's probably really good for a lot of people.
The Go? Microsoft?
Yeah, the Surface Go. The Surface Go is their entry level, kind of like the cheap Surface.
I think I'd somewhat disagree. I think the fact that, well, to me anyways, the fact that that's LTE is targeting a really specific kind of person who works on the Go, like extreme.
Okay, well, that's fine, but the Surface Go starts at $399 currently, so
yeah, definitely. But I think there's some a bit to distinguish between extreme portability, which is form factor that companies target for, and entry level because it's cheap.
Yeah,
but I think there's some tiny distinction there.
Well, I that's one way, I think.
Yeah,
I think that's the default way that I'm going is like, is Google going to minimize their margins on this and try to push an insane volume of first party Chromebooks? I don't know, with the M3, 8 gigs of RAM and 64 gigs of storage, that's a pretty low powered laptop. Yeah, and the hardware externally seems like it's going to be nice. It's going to be this magnesium body, which is not as nice as the aluminum that Apple's and other people use. But it is comparable to the Surface metals that Microsoft uses. It's the same, I think. So I don't know. That's one way that I think about it. And then the other way I think about it is are they going to make this a moneymaker, like a MacBook Air? Is it just going to be basically parallel to the Pixel slate? And I don't know, are they going to push the higher end? I don't know. Like, I just don't know. I honestly don't even know how to think about this device because I don't think there's any comparable Chromebooks on the market.
No.
Based on what we've reported.
From Google or from the marketplace?
Or even on the market, I think, broadly.
I can't. Some Chromebooks come to mind. Asus, I forgot the code, the number. But Asus has one that's, it's basically like the Pixelbook form factor. I think that's a good comparison to Pixelbook Go. In terms of this small, compact laptop kind of thing that Google's going for. Anyways, again, like how to think of this laptop. So, of course, the name plays a lot into how people think about a thing. But at the end of the day, do we agree that price is the biggest factor here?
Like, yeah, I think that's the biggest question mark. It changes what the device is. If this thing starts at $799 or starts at $499, I mean, right now, you can buy a Lenovo Yoga C630 Chromebook that's an Intel Core i5 with 8 gigs of RAM and 128 gigs of memory for $699. And it's retail at $749. So there's no way that they can price this. I mean, the Pixel Slate was priced so high.
Did they learn from that, though? That's the problem.
Yeah, maybe. And I think there's also various things that distinguish the Pixel Slate because the Pixel Slate, you know, is obviously a tablet form factor. It's, you know, it's more flexible, more, you know, it's versatile. And it also has, you know, I think a better display, arguably, you know, the Pixelbook Pen, stuff like that. So this is going to be different than that. But, you know, I don't know. It seems like the M3 64 gig and, you know, 8 gigs of RAM model, it's got to start at like $499 if they want this thing to sell.
Yeah.
I don't know, unless there's something about it that we don't know, but I don't think there is. And then on the other hand, the i7-256 with, you know, 16 gigs of RAM, that could go for $1,400. So,
yeah, it's, again, like, if it were actually $499, we would be excusing a lot of this laptop any cheaper. We would be saying this is a very interesting device, followed by a very interesting strategy that Google wants to flood the market, so to speak. But I don't, right now, I don't see that happening. I think of this laptop more, I associate this laptop more closely with the regular Pixelbook than the Pixelbook Slate, than the Pixel Slate. And I have a feeling that it's, the price is going to be more comparable to an actual laptop, an actual premium laptop that has few to it or compromises.
Yeah. It really is kind of a dichotomy that Google approaches products with. You know, it's like the last few years, the Pixel has been, for on a spec sheet, nothing special, you know? But they price it, they have for the last few years, they've priced the Pixel up there with the iPhone. And they just obviously use various elements of the software and just the fact that it has Google in the name, mm-hmm. and other unique things to justify that price tag. And the other, on the other hand, they've with so many of their products, they've priced them dirt. I mean, look at the Nest Hub, $130, and it's like it's obviously priced to push numbers, push volume, and
it's a good deal.
And I feel like with the Pixelbook, it was priced at a premium, and you know, they, I think, probably maximize their margins on that. Is the question is, are they going to do the same thing with this? Is this going to be, it really comes down to, I think, is this going to be a budget version of the brand name Pixelbook that's for everyone and kind of the economical Chromebook option, first party option? Or is it going to be kind of a sort of successor to the first Pixelbook? And if it was, then it would be priced, you know, at a premium. I don't know. I've done enough rambling about it at this point. I think I just haven't been able to, even in the week that we've had since I wrote the story, I still have not been able to piece together like what this is or who it's for.
Yeah.
My guess is that this will be a competitor to the Surface Go. If I were to guess as of today, right now, that's my guess, is that it's going to be that Google's not going to try and maximize their margins on this, and that it's going to be pushed and as kind of a volume play. So yeah, that'd be my guess, but I don't know. We'll see. Either way, it looks interesting to me as a laptop, and I would be interested in one. The only problem is for me, like, I just need certain applications for doing things like podcasting. Like, I need GarageBand and various, you know, audio editing things. So if it weren't for that, this would definitely be an interesting laptop for me, especially maybe a $999 i5 with, you know, 128 gigs, 256.
Gosh, that sounds expensive. That sounds expensive.
Yeah. And that's the thing too, is they could just span the whole gamut, right?
Yeah, they could
start at $499 and go all the way up to $1,299 or something, or more.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so
that's Pixelbook Go. We'll probably have more details on it in the next couple weeks. Our Kyle wrote up a piece comparing the original Pixelbook versus the Pixelbook Go. I think one of the parts of the story is that a lot of people were expecting this device to be a true follow-up, a true successor, a spec bump and an update to the original Pixelbook, and it just isn't that. I don't think.
Especially in the... So, like, earlier this year, we learned about the fate of Google's laptop tablet division, and it's not doing too well. They, of course, decided to keep this laptop. And I think this device, honestly, seems a compromise between people who want to make a very... another premium Pixelbook, Chromebook successor, and other people who... What if Google tried to do a Pixel 3a for a Chromebook, for a Pixelbook? It's
right.
This Pixelbook Go has a lot of range, and when you try to cram everything into one product, it usually fails. And we can see this with the 4K option on the higher end Pixelbook Goes. So best of luck to Google, but it will be interesting to see whether this product that seems to be doing two things is really good at any of them. At any one.
Yeah, that's an interesting perspective that I think we saw. That's a really good point. The Pixel 3a was the example of Google doing the volume play on a really economical and, you know, high value proposition product, I think. The Pixel 3a was that, and that's, you know, a stark contrast to what they've been doing with the Pixel 3 or premium Pixels for the last few years. And it seems to have gone well. I think, mm-hmm. I mean, obviously, a device that's priced at $400 is going to sell higher numbers than a device that's priced at $900. But yes. Anecdotally, it seems like that device has been well received. And I think that Google, I think, came out the gate with its Made by Google initiative, trying to establish as much as it could, which was not much, itself as a true premium player up against the Apples of the world, right? Mm-hmm. I think they tried to paint that picture for themselves as much as they could. And they followed that up a couple of years. And I think now it seems like they obviously have 3 years of hardware sales data to work with now, and they've learned a lot over the last few years. And I think that maybe they're realizing that maybe they're scaling that vision back a little bit. Maybe they will be embracing what they have for the longest time before the Made by Google kind of hardware division under Rick, like selling really high value products at pretty affordable, reasonable prices.
Yeah,
it's an exciting future to me.
It is, and like all people could actually have a chance of buying it.
Sure. Yeah, it would be nice. I think it would be nice if the premium Pixel was the hobby project and it was the only device left that Google was, you know, they tried with the Pixel Slate. They tried to go straight up against the iPad and they tried to sell it as a premium high-end device. And yeah,
we know how that went.
So anyways, let's move on and talk about, speaking of Pixel, we can talk about the Pixel 4 a little bit, which we had a lot of...
Oh, man.
Let's start with not the stuff that came out last night. Let's start with just various hands-on. So as we've seen, I guess the first thing we haven't talked about since last week's show is that this Irish retailer managed to leak a few things. Well, first, we reported on the names. So we heard that the Pixel 4 would be just black, clearly white, and, drumroll please, oh so orange, which, what do you think about that name?
It's a bit long, I'll give them that. Oh, so orange. It's a mouthful to say, and I cannot wait for somebody to say it on stage. And either everybody nervously laughs, chuckles, or there's no response. So
we should. Yeah, I think I think we've known the name before the event the last couple of years, and it's always a stark reminder of how kind of out of the loop people are. You know, it's like we could post the name is Oso Orange and the event could come around and everyone could act like they've never heard it before.
Yeah.
And I think that has happened at a couple of the most recent events where it's like, we knew the name, but and yet everyone in here was like shocked. Like it was the most hilarious, clever joke ever. And it's like, that was spoiled 2 weeks ago. What's the problem? I don't know. I think the name is pretty nice. It's fun.
It's googly, and you can never fault them for that.
After that, we an Irish retailer leaked the Pixel 4 and Pixel 4 XL colors, including that Oso Orange name. So that's pretty much quadruple confirmed at this point that Oso Orange is the marketing name for the orange. I don't know. I tried to hold on to the idea that it was coral for so long, but I think...
Yeah, coral.
I don't know. It's apparently orange. We're just going to accept that. And it also confirmed this rebrand of the Nest Mini, which we reported on a few weeks ago. And also it leaked some Pixel 4 prices, which we need to talk about that a little bit.
Oh, boy.
After I posted this. So this website, this Alara, this Irish technology retailer, consumer electronics retailer, they have all these prices for the Pixel 4 and Pixel 4 XL. And all these websites went and just converted these prices from euros to US dollars. And what they ended up with was the shocking fact that the standard entry-level Pixel 4 is somehow going to be $1,100, and the 128 gig Pixel 4 XL is going to be as much as $1,600, which is absolutely nuts and not at all what is actually going to happen, in case you didn't know. So there's a few things to talk about here. I wrote an entire piece about it. You can check it out for yourself if you're curious, but I think there's just a great misunderstanding amongst the masses of how price leaks work. One, we don't even know if these are real. Like, they could just straight be just complete placeholders. So that's something to note. Two, you definitely cannot try and just directly convert these to US dollars.
No.
For a lot of reasons. And there's also the fact that let's just use this as an example. If you go on the Irish website for the Google store right now, you can find that the Pixel 3 is available for 899 euros. That's the entry level Pixel 3. And that's not including VAT. Now you convert that to US dollars and you get $990. So yes, that is not at all, not even close, what the current price of the Pixel 3 is in the United States. Well, Pixel 3 has been on sale in the United States for quite a while. Is it still on sale? I forgot.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's been constantly on sale for forever, actually, since probably like the day it launched, basically.
Basically.
But yeah, it's retail $799, currently available for $499. So is that $990? Definitely is not. Anyways. And obviously, the prices on the Alara website were also discounted, which you don't know which of those is the real price. But all of these were like 100 euros cheaper than the quote regular price. So we don't know which one's the regular price. So there's that factor. And yeah, so basically, these are worthless for knowing the US dollar price of the Pixel 4. And I just saw so many headlines that were like, Pixel 4 will be more expensive than iPhone 11 Pro Max. And that is nonsense. And then also, I mean, I guess the final thing is like, there is something that we could take away from this. And if there is anything, which there may not be, because like I said, they could be absolute fake. Like, they could just be placeholders. But if there is one thing, it would be comparing the Pixel 3 prices versus the Pixel 4 prices on Ilara's website, assuming both of those are real prices. And when you do that, you actually get the opposite of what the headlines you saw all over the place were, which is that the Pixel 4 seems like it might actually be cheaper than the Pixel 3.
Mm-hmm.
So that is the tiny grain of, I guess, rumor we have on the Pixel 4 prices. And you think that's going to turn out true? Do you think the Pixel 4 is going to be a little bit cheaper than the Pixel 3?
Yeah, I think it has to be. I think Google's learned its lesson. And obviously, in the context of them needing to sell more phones, cheaper helps. The iPhone 11 also became $50 cheaper this generation. So I think there's a trend to slightly cheaper devices, and I'm sure everyone's going to end up falling.
Yeah, I agree. And I don't think it'll be that much cheaper. It might be $50 cheaper, $100 cheaper, because they still need to keep it differentiated from the Pixel 4B or whatever they decide to call it.
Yes.
So yeah, that's the Pixel price situation. I just don't believe anything that you read online, because it's mostly just fake. Except 9to5google.com. They're the most reliable source of information that is on the entire web. I mean, other than that, we just basically saw a bunch of other hands-ons, some closer detailed looks at the face unlock settings. Which, that's interesting. The face unlock settings are far more granular than face unlock on iPhone.
Which, it's interesting approach.
Any strong feelings about that?
Yeah, not really. As long as it works and it ushers in secure face unlock on Android. It's a start.
Yes, there's 5 settings toggles for face unlock. You can use it to unlock your phone, obviously. You can turn on or off the ability to use it for signing into apps and payments. What do you think the app sign-in means? You think that's third-party applications that have taken advantage of the face unlock APIs?
Basically, that.
For instance, like 1Password? Or do you think that it's some system level? Okay, yeah.
So, quickly, the biometrics API, if you have a bank app that allows fingerprints, it'll just switch to your face.
Right.
Bank apps.
You can toggle on and off whether or not to skip the lock screen entirely. So instead of unlocking and then having to swipe, you can just, if it sees your face, it just opens, which is what we saw happen in the little promo video that Google put out a few months ago with face unlock. You can also turn on or off the requirements for eyes to be open, which is mandatory on iPhone, I believe.
Yeah.
Regardless. And you can also, when using face unlock in apps, always require a confirmation step. I don't know what that means, but you can turn on or off an extra confirmation step whenever you're unlocking.
So I think it's basically like seamless. Whether there's like an interface that appears, like whether you can just like look at it and it automatically unlocks. That's what it sounds to me, without seeing any visual confirmations.
Gotcha. There's setting for the smooth display, which with it toggled on, it seems like it's dynamic by default, which is interesting. It will automatically switch between 60 hertz and 90 hertz based on what's on the display. What do you think the qualifications for that are going to be? Do you think that it's going to be on when you're scrolling through apps or?
Yeah, that sounds about right, especially video. I'm not sure about video actually, but yeah, when suited, hopefully Google's smart about that.
Yeah, I'm curious to see when that 90 hertz is turned on. For me, the biggest thing in daily use is scrolling. I've gotten so spoiled by that on the ProMotion 120 hertz on iPad Pro.
Yeah.
And apparently, this was a big thing for me. The back finish of the Pixel 4 was detailed by this site called what are they called? NextDrift. Yeah. They detailed the back texture, I guess, and they said. What'd they say? The back panel's texture isn't what I expected. Even though it does have a matte texture, it's a very light finish to the point where it almost feels like regular glass. So it's not going to be super glossy like the standard, the top half of the Pixel 3 or the Pixel. No.
Just good.
The glass.
Pixel 3.
Glossy glass. Yeah. It will be matte, but it's just not going to be as matte as the... Not as soft, I guess, as the Pixel 3, which that's a bummer to me. I've actually had a chance now to feel the back of the iPhone 11 Pro and compare it side by side with the Pixel 3. And if I would rate them on a scale of 1 to 10, I know I do this with vibration motors. I'm going to do it with matte backs now. Mm. That's going to be my new thing. Matte textured backs. I would say that the Pixel 3 is like an 8 out of 10. It's like really close to feeling like a pillow. And the iPhone 11 Pro is like a 5 out of 10. I'm curious where the Pixel 4 falls in that spectrum. But that was an interesting little tidbit for me personally. Obviously the leaks for Pixel 4 are getting super, super tiny and granular at this point. Although, despite them being granular, we had a little bit of a flood yesterday, didn't we?
Yes, we did. We got some APKs from these Pixel 4s, and we just did some deep dives on very user-facing aspects, personalization, customization, even motion sense. So I think let's dive right in with this theming thing, which is something that stock Google Android users have always wanted, and it's just the ability to make themes for your phones to match colors, app icons, status bar icons, that kind of stuff, and to create this profile, so to speak, and to create more profiles and just easily switch between them. It'll feel like it's an obvious thing for Google to do here, because everybody loves customizing their phones, and with Google already picking outrageous colors, one outrageous color every year, it makes sense to give users even more ways to customize it. So that is called Pixel Themes, or that's what we're assuming it's going to be called at launch. It is a part of the new Styles and Wallpapers app, which is, it's still Google Wallpapers, but that's going to get an update with the material theme and such. So yeah, theming. I think people are going to love this. Just tweaking their phones at will in an super easy and clean way. And it's better than having to dig into developer options to do this kind of stuff. So this is just Google centralizing all the features they've announced throughout the Android Q period into this one interface.
Yeah, I think this is the right way to do customization. If you're going to do customization, which I don't really care for, because I personally prefer the way, you know, I mean, in the Pixel Themes app, I've actually used it now on my Pixel 3. I prefer the default, I think, of everything that's currently kind of customizable right now. I like the circular icons. I like the default font. I like the default blue color that Google uses. I like, you know, and so yeah. I don't know. I think for me, I'm just going to keep the default, because I think the way Google's designed things is works the best. But obviously, you know, some people will have an interest in customizing things. I think if you are going to do it this, I, if you are going to offer this, I think the way Google's has put this together is pretty
tasteful.
And it's tasteful.
Yeah, so. And it's like at the minimum, it's quite hard to make an ugly theme, which I think you can customize things to the point of ugliness, and I think the options that Google gave are pretty good. They all work together at a fundamental level. So tasteful design, tasteful customization.
I agree.
And one further step on customization on the Pixel 4 is everybody's favorite live wallpapers. They're, of course, a new set this year, and it looks, and when these wallpapers are live on the Pixel 4, it very much looks like you can customize it even further. You can customize themes and patterns and that kind of stuff. So this should, I don't know, guess kind of my favorite part of the phone every year, the wallpaper choices. Google's very detailed and accurate with their designs, and it's always interesting to see what they do every year.
Yeah, it kind of feels Google's live wallpapers kind of feel like the screensavers on the Apple TV, like they're live.
Yes,
screensavers, like similar level of attention to detail and quality, I think. So I really like this too. Another thing that we exclusively got our hands on and leaked yesterday is the Recorder app, which is a very simple little app that's now going to be available on the Pixel 4. It's basically voice recorder. Up until now, if you've owned an Android phone, if an OEM doesn't pack that in, you've pretty much been stuck with downloading a third-party app from the Play Store.
And that gets sketchy fast.
Yes, and this is a nice one. And it's already available on APK Mirror. So if you want to head over to APK Mirror and check out this app, it's called Google Recorder. You can download and run it on any Android phone. And it's very straightforward. It lets you record audio from the device microphone, edit the name, save it, stuff like that, play it back. Yep. It's pretty straightforward. I like it. It's really simple. And the animations are really satisfying. So I would download it and try it out just for that. So that's that. What else was there?
Motion Sense. We have a list of countries where Motion Sense will work, which is presumably behind the scenes. There needs to be technical approval, radio signals approval from a country's regulatory agency to allow SORI to work. That was the case with the FCC in the United States, and that presumably there is a regulatory process in other countries. But the point is that over time, it will presumably come to more countries via a software update as Google is ready to get these approvals.
Yeah, and there were some notable countries missing from this list. Some of them we already knew about, for instance, Japan, thanks to Best Buy leaking the details. But we have the full list, and some of the most notable missing countries are, what would you say, Australia, Mexico?
Yeah, Australia was really sticks out.
Yeah, that's a pretty unfortunate one. But this is, again, I think this list is, well, first of all, this list is pre-release, so
yes,
it could be changed by the time the launch event actually happens. Another thing is
it can always come in software.
Then yeah, things could always come later. So don't get too upset if your country's not on this list. I wouldn't say.
Yeah, definitely.
And the other thing is the app list too. The 9 media apps that are going to be compatible. We don't know what this list is. We see this list inside the app. And all we know is this is a list of apps that support motion sense. Does that mean we know for sure this is an exhaustive list? Or could this just be a list of officially sanctioned and tested apps that Google knows for sure works? And that's just going to be the ones that they're going to be pushing or advertising. I don't know. I would guess, like, to me, it seems like the whole skip forward, skip back, that's a system level kind of function. Yeah. And so I don't see there's any reason why it wouldn't work in any music app. I don't know. We'll see. But I would guess that this is not going to be the exhaustive list of media apps that will take advantage of motion sense. So
yeah, it doesn't make sense to limit it on Google's end too.
Yeah. So that's Pixel 4. We have a lot of things just sitting on the site right now. So if you want to go over to 95google.com, there's plenty of
many guides. Many guides.
Featured section, many guides. So be sure to check that out. Dark Theme is still rolling out some Android phones, or not Android phones, some Google apps. Google Play Store finally got Dark Theme this week, and Gmail on Android and iOS also got.
Yes, they're all beginning to roll out. So the Play Store is, that might take a while because everything in the Play Store takes a long while to roll out. Gmail, we're looking at around 2 weeks from the beginning of this week. So it should be coming out sooner than later. And the same can be said of Assistant and the Google app. It appears that existing beta users are getting it right now. So again, that's also sooner than later kind of thing.
Yeah. And also, I wanted to mention this for anyone listening. 95google.com also has a dark theme now. It's got a few little minor bugs going on right now, but should be worked out. We just launched it today, so if you want to go out over to 95google.com and click the little dark toggle and check it out. It respects the Android 10 system level toggle. It also respects the iOS 13 system level toggle, and it also respects macOS system level toggle. So. And I think that only applies to Safari, if I remember correctly. I'm not sure if that applies to Chrome as well when you have it toggled in Catalina. Yeah, so that's live as of like an hour ago. So that's new. let us know what you think. And that's pretty much the majority of what happened this week. We should have some more little things to talk about next week, but it feels like we're kind of entering into pretty much everything's leaked at this point.
2 more weeks from Tuesday.
Yes.
Oh, man.
2 more weeks. And there are a few things that we can say almost certainly will be on the docket for next week's show that you don't know about yet. So
yeah. Yeah.
Be sure to tune in for that.
Yeah.
What?
No, I was going to say, no, it's, never mind.
No, you have to say it now. You can't tease the audience.
No, I'm just going to say, I'm good. I take it back.
Okay, fine. All right, well, let's just wrap the show there. I think we've exhausted ourselves on these topics, and we probably should have come a little bit more prepared in terms of thinking about some of these things.
It's been a long week.
It has. We have an excuse. If you know what we've been through for the last 3 days, especially the last 24 hours, you should have a little bit of you would have a little bit of sympathy for us. I can't. I'm stumbling or stumbling all of my words. I can't even.
Yeah, it's a Friday show. We haven't done a Friday show in ages, and I'm starting to remember why we stopped and moved earlier.
All right. Well, until next week, when we have some more stories for you, you can tune in to Alphabet Scoop here every week. We record this podcast every week, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. We publish on the next morning, probably. And you can find us on all your favorite podcasting platforms, such as iTunes and Apple Podcasts, Pocket Cast, Google Podcasts, Google Play, and also over at 95google.com. Thanks for tuning in next, as always. And thanks to Abner for joining me. And we'll see you next week. Maybe I'll be able to speak next Friday. We'll see.
No, yes, next Friday. All right. Bye.
Later.